Hello, I'm Rob Andrew.
And I'm Darren Davidson.
And this is Kootenai Morning.
Negotiators from Canada and BC, along with Columbia Basin Indigenous Nations, are in discussions with U.S. negotiators as both sides continue their aims to negotiate a new version of the Columbia River Treaty. The provincial minister responsible for the treaty and its vital economic development juggernaut, the Columbia Basin Trust, is Kootenai West's very own Katrine Conroy. Mr. Conroy, after the NDP election win last fall, was named the province's first female minister of forest, lands, natural resource operations, and rural development. In addition to helping folks get ready for an upcoming virtual town hall meeting, an update on the treaty renegotiations, we're hoping to squeeze in an update on some of her ministry's other weighty topics, including the plight of the endangered mountain caribou and the future of rural BC's economy. Lots of ground to cover. Minister Katrine Conroy joins us today. Good morning, Minister Conroy. Thanks a bunch for the time.
Good morning, Darren and Rob. Great to be here again.
Mr. Conroy, for people who don't know, can you give us an idea of how important the waters of the Columbia Basin are to the western United States, and what does the treaty provide to us, British Columbians and Canadians?
Well, Rob, actually, I'm a longtime resident of the Columbia Basin, so I understand what the treaty means to people in this region and in terms of the history and how the treaty impacted people in this part of the province. The upside is that today we're in a position to try to do things differently, and that is to include people and communities in a way that really didn't happen when the treaty was signed in the 1960s. You know, the treaty's a water management agreement between U.S. and Canada, and it was signed in 1961 and ratified in 1964, and its original purpose was to provide hydropower generation as well as flood management. And it was a huge priority at the time because it was protecting communities. There was disastrous events like in 1948. There was significant flooding. It actually wiped out the American city of Vanport. The city's not there anymore. It's on the Washington-Oregon border. And that in 48, the flood also caused significant damage here in our area. Trail was really hard hit. There was water from the Columbia pouring through the streets, and it was more than a meter deep on the sidewalks. It really caused significant property damage. But you know, today the treaty it provides hydropower and flood risk management to both countries. And in the U.S., the treaty also supports fish spawning and migration, recreation, tourism, shipping and navigation, and agriculture as well.
And so in BC, are we still getting a significant energy production benefit from the Columbia River Treaty?
Yeah, we are. I'll tell you, like, in economic terms, when the treaty was originally signed in the 60s, Canada and BC, because BC receives the benefits because we're the area that's affected by it, we received upfront lump sum prepayments for flood control benefits in the U.S. for the first 60 years of the treaty, which ends September 2024. And we also receive about between 120 and 150 million every year through the sale of Canada's share of the U.S.'s downstream power benefits, which we call the Canadian entitlement. And this revenue, it goes right to the province's consolidated revenue fund in Victoria. And in terms of energy production, the Columbia River Power System, which it's operated by BC Hydro, it generates about well over almost 22,000 gigawatt hours a year of clean energy. So that's about 48% of BC Hydro's power generation. So it continues to, you know, give us flood protection in this part of the province, particularly around our area, like Trail, Castlegar, you know, Revelstoke, also Creston and Kootenai Lake. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the environmental benefits, that's something that the two countries were not seen as a priority when the treaty was designed, but it's certainly something we're going to push now as we negotiate with the U.S. towards a much more modernized treaty.
Okay, so a modernized treaty is what you're calling it. So how long have these negotiations been underway, and do we know when they'll be light at the end of the tunnel? When will it be done?
Well, the current negotiations, they started in May 2018, and since then, the Canadian and American our negotiating teams, they've met 10 times in different locations. We alternate between the two countries. So the last round of the talks, they were hosted by Canada in June, which was done virtually because of COVID. And as for how long the negotiations might last or what the outcome might be, it's really too early to predict. you know, the treaty, it doesn't have a specified end date. So there isn't a deadline in the sense, and, you know, there isn't one. If either party were to decide to terminate the treaty, they'd have to give at least 10 years notice. So if negotiations went bad and we said, that's it, we're done, we would have to give 10 years notice, as would the Americans. So the treaty, it's going to be around for a while longer. But we're really hoping that we can reach with agreement with the U.S. on a modernized version of it. And from my perspective, personally, this isn't a treaty that should be negotiated quickly. It's not about getting a win from a political perspective. This isn't about an agreement that's going to affect generations for years to come. And, you know, when you think of it, when the treaty was signed, I was just a little kid, and I grew up watching the effects on the treaty of the people in this area. And now I'm in a position to oversee these negotiations, and it'll affect basin residents at the same age as my kids, my grandkids, and what will be my great-grandkids, you know, for years to come. So I want to make sure that we do it right, because this is a treaty that's going to be around for years. It's going to affect so many people in the basin. So it has to be done correctly, not quickly.
We should mention, Minister Conroy, the details about the upcoming town hall meeting, which will be Thursday. Is it Thursday, February 24th from 6 to 8? I believe it's a Thursday. Those are posted
right.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
They're posted on the province's Columbia River Treaty website. The session will be held by Zoom, with an option to phone in for those who are not able to connect online. You can send your questions out there till, I think, about the 22nd. But how would you characterize treaty talks with the U.S. thus far? And have any of the main players or demands changed since Donald Trump left the White House and Joe Biden moved in? Two very different people, two very different administrations and approaches to bilateral trade agreements.
Yeah, and those are good questions. And well, since the discussions began in 2018, the negotiators, they've been exchanging information and you know, building a stronger understanding of each country's main concerns and priorities for a modernized treaty. It was important for us to have the American contingency come up here and actually see the basin. So the negotiations aren't just taking place in Victoria, Vancouver, or Ottawa, or Washington, D.C. We're actually ensuring that they come to the basin and see the effects of what happened here. And I guess last year, the country started having the more challenging conversations mm-hmm. about how to include the many and diverse interests in a modernized treaty, and that includes addressing ecosystems in the treaty. And during the recent round of discussions in June of 2020, we tabled a proposal outlining a framework for a modernized Columbia River Treaty, and that was developed collaboratively, you know, by the people from our negotiating team from Canada, the team from here in BC, and then our Columbia Basin Indigenous Nations representatives. So our proposal, it did follow a framework that was shared by the U.S. negotiations. The negotiators, they prepared a set of a framework that they presented in March of 2020. You know, that outlined their thinking on key issues. And so that was our response to their proposal. And we haven't heard back yet on what their response is going to be. And I think a lot of that is because of there's the election,
right.
There's a transition. And I think in terms of the new administration, it's probably a little too early to say what effect it'll have on the treaties. We feel that it'll probably be the same negotiating team. But we will wait and see. And I know our Canadian, the head negotiator, is in contact with the Americans. Just and work continues. Like, we're not sitting there not doing anything. The work continues with the BC negotiators team and the representatives from the Indigenous nations are working really hard to, you know, keep up to information and working together to and taking the information from the communities, which is why the meeting on the 24th is so important. Because one of the things that's been very different from what we're doing as compared to what was done in the 50s and 60s, for instance, is we're actually meeting with the local people. We've got two different great, we've got the local government committee, we've got the regional advisory committee. You know, those groups are having direct input into the negotiating committee. And then we have these meetings where people can come and just and provide their input on concerns and issues and raising it. And it's really good that we can do this and get that information from the local people.
Okay, so again, those details on the town hall, it's this upcoming Thursday, February 24th from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's on Zoom, and you can get more details on the province's Columbia River Treaty website. On to some other issues in the writing, Katrina. We spoke with Craig Pettit of the Valhalla Wilderness Society on Wednesday. Environmentalists are raising concern over proposed BC timber sales plans to expand logging within a few hundred meters of Winter Mountain caribou habitat and a proposed park at the north end of Duncan Lake. Craig said the BC timber sales is helping push these caribou off the face of the planet. Do you have any response to those concerns?
Well, thanks for the question. And I want to thank Craig for the question and acknowledge all the work he and other members of the Valhalla Wilderness Society have done over the years. They've done some incredible work. And he raises a key concern that we're dealing with through the Caribou Recovery Program. But it also highlights the real complexities and challenges of caribou recovery. And just to give a broader provincial context, there's a ton of existing habitat protection in place, and we've operated two maternal pens in the province, and we've made attempts to transplant caribou. We've taken steps with predator management and snowmobile management. We've also really enhanced the monitoring and inventory work, and we're working to develop meaningful collaboration with Indigenous communities in a number of areas. So the ministry has developed a pretty deep understanding of the issues that face caribou, and also the concerns with rural communities that are resource-based economies. And, the challenges, they're really challenging issues which need to be dealt with in order to keep caribou on the landscape in a meaningful way. And these are they're really difficult issues, but we're tackling them in a collaborative manner. We're working closely with the Government of Canada. We're with Indigenous nations, with communities, and stakeholder groups. And we hope for solutions to be developed quickly, but recognize that, that due to the complex actions required to build durable solutions, that there needs to be time for engagement and analysis that what we're doing is working. So meaningful actions are being taken and developed, just to ensure that the citizens of BC can be proud of the inclusive and durable approach to caribou recovery, because we know how critically important it is.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Minister of Forests, Katrine Conroy. Mr. Conroy, Mr. Pettit asked us to ask you an exact question, and he's probably coming after you on this. We said, we were typing as fast as we could to get it down verbatim. He said, if you don't have it, I can email it right to you. But it sounds like you just answered the question. Essentially, they're wondering why plans that are as much as 5 or 6 years overdue and in contravention actually of the Species at Risk Act, why they're taking so long to be enacted. But what you have just said is it is a very complex issue. Is that? I guess we should just leave it at that for now. But it sounds like you're doing.
It is, and again, it's we're working hard to come up with a long lasting solution to, the issues facing the Southern Mountain Caribou, and the solutions. We need to make sure that people are confident that the caribou remain on the landscape for the long term, and that people in the area can support the plan. So it is complex, and I really appreciate the. Craig's passion on this issue, and as many other people, I've heard about it a lot since I've been in the 3 months I've been minister, so
no
definitely
doubt.
Working
no
on
doubt.
It.
Some good news now before we let you go. Your ministry announced this week that the province is investing $4.5 million to help rural businesses and communities recover from the pandemic impacts of COVID-19. Your ministry is in fact responsible for economic recovery programs that are worth more than $100 million. So this is not a huge piece, but what exactly is the plan specifically in regard to what you're doing for rural businesses and communities?
This specific plan that you're talking about, it's funding. It's part of the Stronger BC for Everyone recovery plan, and it's expected to create approximately 60 temporary jobs. And it's focused on providing support and advisory services to help rural businesses and communities throughout BC. And what we've done is we distributed the funding to three of our partner trusts: the Northern Development Initiative Trust, the Southern Interior Development Initiative Trust, and the Island Coast Economic Trust. So, ours is the Southern Interior Development Initiative Trust, and they will offer services to rural businesses and communities, and that may range from supporting shifts in business focus to linking communities to resources and supporting implementation of their economic recovery.
We had a couple more questions for you, Mr. Conroy, but we got to get going. We wanted to skip to the most important, and that was, with the unseasonable weather out in Victoria, has a Kootenai guy like yourself had to provide any snow shoveling tips for any of those islanders?
Oh my goodness! Yes, it's been pretty tough down there. And on Friday, I think it was, I got a picture of one of my one of my colleagues' vehicles that was totally covered in snow, but you know, about 3 or 4 inches, so they couldn't go anywhere because they didn't have winter tires. So they were working from home that day. So you know, it's interesting the difference between, you know, when we live up here and I drive to Victoria occasionally. I take my truck, it's four-wheel drive, and I had to buy a new scraper for the truck, and you know, a big brush scraper you buy in the Kootenays, and I pulled it out, and they thought I'd bought a new broom or something. They were giving me the gears about my huge scraper, but it's what I think they were wishing they had it last week when it snowed down there. It's difficult. It's a challenge for them. They're not used to it, but we like to remind ourselves that there's differences all across the province when it comes to weather. So I'd rather live in the Kootenays any day and put up with our cold and snow than rain. So I'm good with it. I like my seasons.
Hopefully Premier Horgan is covering the costs of your gigantic Kootenay size sweeper.
No, that's all on my own.
Okay. We've been speaking with Minister Katrine Conroy, who is MLA for Kootenay West. Thanks very much for the time, Minister, and we will get back to you, I'm sure, in the next month on what seems to be a pretty steady stream of hot topics.